Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 7 Deadly Sinners early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge. The riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge premieres April 17th, streaming only on Hulu.
Like, they'll try to get you to come to the Kingdom Hall, and everybody is so excited to see you and welcoming and kind, but that doesn't last forever. It's just the beginning.
Flirting is cruel and dangerous.
Like, if you're baptized, you are in that shit. You're in that shit forever.
When a Christian commits porneia, the elders always have to provide assistance. A second area we want to draw your attention to is the need to keep on guard against sexting.
You don't question things.
Both need to get help from the elders because their conversations are becoming more and more unclean.
Welcome back to another episode of 7 Deadly Sinners, part 2 on Doomsday Cult. I mean, Jehovah's Witnesses. Sorry. There's so much bad that it honestly becomes a moral dilemma of which is worse or what to choose as their worst beliefs. And the trolley problem comes to mind, one in which we will go into in part 3, a moral dilemma of who or what to choose in morality and ethics. But in this part 2 on Jehovah's Witnesses, I'm going to attempt to lay their most troubling practices out, ones that led to the murder-suicide of a family disfellowshipped by the church for the simple act of wanting their child to have an education. Which will conclude part 3 on the Jehovah's Witnesses, with this family's story and another interview with a woman who grew up in the church and, like Cassie last week, is willing to share her story. We will also hear more from my interview with Cassie this episode as it weaves into the troubling practices laid out. Pride was the sin ascribed to this group in part 1, and pride still rings the most true to me. I mean, how much pride do you have to have as a leader and elder to tell promising young people that you know the world is going to end, even though you got it wrong 100 times before, and you know the best thing for their future, and you know that if they go to college, they would be pulled into sin, away from Jehovah, and it's just not worth it. And remember, what's the point of it anyway? Because the world is ending soon. It's always right around the corner, has been since the 1800s, and it's any day now, guys. Any day. And as we all know, crusty old white men are the authority. They always have been. Historically, they know best. I mean, just look at it. They've always known what was right for you as kids, for minority groups, for women. I mean, God, remember when women were so hysterical back in the Victorian days and we had to lock them away? Ugh, they were such a nuisance. I mean, they wanted to ride the newly invented bikes or gasp, have an opinion, let alone vote? I mean, it makes me sick thinking about it. And the whorish way some showed their ankles, it's disgusting.
All of us avoid bad association, whether in person on TV or on the internet. What's a fourth means by which Satan attempts to fashion us, reshaping our thinking? Higher education. Most of us remember the January 2015 JW Broadcasting Program hosted by Brother Morris of the governing body. He focused on the value of divine education. But he also reaffirmed the dangers of pursuing higher secular education. Its whole purpose is for learning, influencing one's thinking. And while a person's intention might be just to create a stable base for a secular future, his decision could expose him to unscriptural ideas and practices. Satan's glass shop is also skilled at shaping one's thinking. But what does it produce? Instead of a person becoming a valuable vessel that Jehovah can use, Satan is actually mass-producing worthless vessels that Jehovah cannot use. What could you do with this misshaped creation? Nothing. It is useless. At the outset, Romans 9:22 was quoted. Those who conform to Satan's system are referred to as vessels of wrath made fit for destruction.
Now, I've listened to that clip a few times. And number one, his dramatic throwing of what really looks like an upside-down wine glass, useful in my opinion, is comedic and so stupid. But for whatever reason, when recording this and going off script right now from what I've written, this last viewing kind of made me sad. It seems to say that if you're not perfect, if you don't follow everything they tell you to do, you are disposable and worthless. But guess what? No one is perfect. And people who struggle with depression, addiction, have made mistakes like cheating or fighting and saying words they don't mean, you're not disposable because of that. And maybe that's what grosses me out most about this quote-unquote religion. So let's walk down this prideful path against higher education together. We briefly touched on it last week, but we need to go more in depth in order to understand the intensity of this belief and its effects before diving into the tragic deaths of an entire family in next week's episode. Deaths that, at least in some way, were connected to this future-crushing belief, one that stopped countless youth from pursuing their very innocent goals. And if you do a quick search on JW.org's library of former Watchtower publications for words like career or education, you will find articles dating back to the 60s all the way up to today with lessons and testimony about how worldly careers and higher education are simply not fulfilling or a downright waste of time. Here are a few excerpts from a 1982 publication and a 2019 one. So the 1982 Watchtower article that was titled Education, What It Costs and What It Offers. Now I pared it down. I did not change anything that they wrote. I just took out some unnecessary bullshit. So it starts with colleges and universities. In many lands, after primary schooling, young folk normally continue on to secondary education. At this point, many Christian parents, remembering how Jesus was trained as a carpenter, encouraged their children to obtain some sort of vocational training. They know when the youngsters grow up, they will have responsibilities, and now is a good time to start equipping them to handle these. Okay, fine, it says 1 Timothy 5, 4, 8, but they're also, you know, interpreting it in their own way, like many religions do. Some wonder whether they should direct their children toward a university education. Why? In a poor country, a university education may seem the best way to get ahead. It may appear to offer financial security and even more. However, are these the things a Christian parent should put first when planning the education of his child? Many parents think not. They prefer to explore alternative ways to prepare their children for life. Why? Because the benefits of a university education are often not worth the cost. So what's the cost? Well, Would it be wise for Christian parents to make such sacrifices to send their children to a university? Perhaps you can afford the financial cost. But is there another price that has to be considered? Often, yes. For example, one man's parents allowed him to travel to Europe to attend university. Did his attendance there lead to his having financial security or raise the status of his family back at home? No. At the urging of his new, quote-unquote, friends at the university, he took drugs and died of an overdose. Another young African went to a university in the United States. He was brought home with suspected brain damage from drugs and alcohol. What a price the parents of these young men paid. Other Christian parents have also paid heavily. A young man enrolled in a university in his own country, but far from home. He stopped associating with fellow Christians and ceased to serve Jehovah. All the things he had learned, quote-unquote, from infancy, left him, and now he even questions the teachings of the Bible. Unfortunately, this young man is not alone. There are others who were brought up to serve God who are now evolutionists, atheists, and critics of biblical truth. Is this because the Bible is wrong and modern philosophy is right? Not at all. It is because they were subjected to a constant onslaught of ungodly ideas at college while separated from other Christians. As a result, their faith weakened and finally died. The sad thing is, they were often put in that situation by their parents. Okay, that was all a direct quote. I gotta say, were they put there by their parents, or can kids make their own decisions too? Additionally, not everyone who goes to college dies of a drug overdose, Mr. Elder of your dumb Kingdom Hall. But don't worry, guys. They explain this because they want to give you a balanced viewpoint. The next section in the article is titled Balanced Viewpoint. And let's just see how balanced it is. They say, quote, "But it may be objected. Not everyone who goes to university loses his Christian faith or dies of a drug overdose. This is true. Some graduates have become valued and hardworking members of the Christian congregation. But consider, is it also true that not every child who plays on a busy street will get killed by a passing automobile? Some survive to grow up. But would you let your children play in the street and traffic because of that?" Now, I find the comparison between a busy street and a child playing in the middle of it an incredibly unbalanced comparison to your young adult child studying math or communications, business, hell, even religion at college. I don't know about you, but I don't think a poli-sci class is the gateway drug to freebasing cocaine, but that's just me. They go on to say, quote, "Does this mean that it is wrong to attend a university? This is something each parent should decide for his own child." Or the child could decide for themselves, but, you know, it is their own life, but it doesn't really matter. And it also, I don't know if you notice, it just says his own child, and all children and people are referred to as he in this. It's not a big deal. However, in doing so, back to their writings, I was going to say scripture, certainly isn't. However, in doing so, he should consider the above facts. It may be that the student can stay at home and attend college, or perhaps he can stay with relatives who will keep a close watch on his associates and strongly encourage him to keep active in his Christian responsibilities. But considering all circumstances, will it be worth the time and effort? Will it equip him the better to serve his God? Many parents feel that the potential benefits of a university education are not worth the possible horrendous costs, especially where the children would have to go unsupervised to another city or country. End quote. And I hate that I had to read that. So that was from 1982. But let's not blame the 80s, you know, on all this backwards stuff. Because here's an example from 2019 of a successful businesswoman who gave her testimony of why being a working woman was just so unfulfilling. So the article is titled, "Readily Submit to Jehovah, Why and How." Watchtower excerpt. Businesswoman, quote, "A sister named Mary faced that challenge. Before learning about Jehovah, she attended one of the most prestigious schools in her country. Mary felt pressure from her family to get a high-paying job in a respected profession. She too wanted that. However, after she learned about Jehovah and came to love him, she changed her goals. Even so, she says, quote, "Sometimes I see attractive business opportunities that could allow me to earn a lot of money, but would disrupt my spiritual routine. Because of the way I was raised, I still struggle to say no, and I have to beg Jehovah to help me resist the temptation to accept work that could take me away from my service to him," end quote. And besides higher education and worldly careers being a recipe for being a drug-using career woman unfulfilled and unchristian, their second pitch for why higher education is a no-no: the end of the world is coming, so what's the point, huh? What are we throwing money at this for? Throw money at the church, guys. Donate, come on. And here's one excerpt from a March 15th, 1969 Watchtower publication I found on Scribd. Great resource, by the way. This is not an ad. They are just a great research tool. That's all I'm saying. Here's the quote. This one's a doozy, guys. Quote, "The influence and spirit of this world is to get ahead, to make a name for oneself. Many schools now have student counselors who encourage one to pursue higher education after high school, to pursue a career with a future in the system of things. Do not be influenced by them." That's all underlined, by the way. "Do not let them brainwash you with the devil's propaganda to get ahead, to make something of yourself in this world. This world has very little time left!" Exclamation point. "Any, quote, future this world offers is no future!" Exclamation point. "Wisely then, let God's word influence you in selecting a course that will result in your protection and blessing. Make pioneer service the full-time ministry with the possibility of Bethel or missionary service your goal. This is a life that offers an everlasting future!" Exclamation point. There are also excerpts from a 1975 Watchtower publication that commends Jehovah's Witnesses that sold everything to give up their lives and careers to witness. You know, instead of work and provide for their families, because the end of days are quickly approaching. It says, quote, "Yes, since the summer of 1973, there have been new peaks in pioneers every month. Now there are 20,394 regular and special pioneers in the United States, at all-time peak. That is 5,190 more than there were in February 1973. A 34% increase. Does that not warm our hearts? Reports are heard of brothers selling their homes and property and planning to finish out the rest of their days in this old system in the pioneer service. Certainly, this is a fine way to spend the short time remaining before the wicked world's end." End quote. Ugh. And one of the ultimate punishments for not following this belief and giving yourself the gift of education and life experience is potentially being disfellowshipped and shunned. But shunning and disfellowship means much more than just not being allowed to attend the life-disruptive amount of meetings and man-hours required witnessing. Oh no, being disfellowshipped is a full-on Mean Girls-level, public, social, and even familial-level ousting that gives the worst bull you know a run for their money. The difference, though, is that these witnesses are supposed to be compassionate, loving Christians. The 144,000 anointed and chosen godly saints on earth. But man, they are not, if anything, mother effing mean. If you're not a witness, you're against us. What is this? God's street gang? A catty high school clique of mean girls, like I said? Like, how godlike to instruct your congregation to ostracize anyone who disagrees with doctrine or makes a mistake. And I don't know, tries a beer? Takes a puff of a cigarette? Flirts with the girl in math class? Shunning is a vital part of being Jehovah's Witnesses. So much so that you can be disfellowshipped yourself if you continue to speak or associate in any way with a disfellowshipped member for sharing in their wicked works. The governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses cares about the practice enough that they fought for that right in court multiple times. There are three tiers of reprimanding for Jehovah's Witnesses. When it is discovered that a baptized member has sinned, a judicial committee of elders is appointed to determine if the individual can be reproved, marked, or needs to be entirely disfellowshipped. If a member is disfellowshipped, then they are shunned by all. There is an announcement made at the next Kingdom Hall meeting, and it is explicitly stated that this person is, quote, no longer one of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Shunning starts immediately after the announcement, and a formal letter is sent to local JW offices to save the disfellowshipping in congregational records. It's so petty. Now, if the elders decide that the person is truly sorry for their sin and actively repenting to their liking, they will say there is hope for this individual, and after informing the entire congregation of what they have done, they will essentially put the person on a reproof probation, withholding the privilege to pray or even speak in meetings, and there is no way they could be a pioneer until they have hit their repentance high score and are finally reproved by the elders. God, I feel like I'd hand them $100 and say, you know what, thank you. Now I have an out from those exhaustive meetings, and now I don't want to speak at meetings. I don't have to, like, listen to what you're saying, so then I have to, like, be alert to, like, speak at them. This is a gift you have given me, and now I can zone out and hide a magazine in my Bible and see what makeup tricks Allure says I need in 2022. If that seemed a little personal, it's because it was. Or is. When I was in high school, and this isn't a brag because there were 52 people in my graduating class, so it wasn't hard to be chosen as the smart, ambitious girl or whatever. But boy, did they have me wrong. So I was chosen as the one girl from my high school to go to this torturous political camp on Willamette University in Oregon my senior year. And I say torture because it was my worst nightmare. Number one, I hate group activities. And number two, I don't like conforming to dressing or having to sit through any type of group singing or marching, let alone fucking flag raising. And this isn't to make myself sound more relatable to the JWs, because they don't salute the flag. As we know, if you went to high school with any of them, they're not allowed to, like, stand up and salute the flag. Sure, I like the flag, but as a senior in high school, the last thing I wanted to do was pretend to be honored to be sent away for a week as a smart kid to get up at 6 a.m. and flag raise and march with dumb white gloves on, and then spend the rest of the day in lectures where, and this story will come full circle right now, I would hide a magazine in my notebook and go to the back of the room, sometimes lay down so they couldn't see me, and I would pretend to read along. I would, like, move my finger along, like, oh yeah, this is so amazing. But I was really, like, reading about, like, five summer hairstyles to use and what college guys find sexy. Sorry, I'm human and an idiot, and I digress, but I dare several Jehovah's Witness girls to tell me that they didn't do the same in these torturous meetings.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Because being inauthentic, which I admit, reading those magazines is actually pretty inauthentic too, but whatever. We do the best we can. But not being human and your age and going through it is downright cruel. Let the kids live. Okay, back to something not about me. So now if the sin is just not sultry enough, okay, so we got the stuff that you can be completely disfellowshipped for, right? Not down with the devil, but frowned upon by the good Jehovah's Witnesses, an individual will be marked. I guess they tape like a kick me if I've sinned on their back. No, but for even the smallest infraction, an announcement will be made out loud at church, which is just so culty and cruel, to mark the person. And while they're not completely shunned, but if that embarrassment isn't enough, their social contact is also limited for something as small as stealing the elders' donuts out of the break room fridge. And in all of these scenarios, the perpetrators are considered essentially spiritual outlaws, and members are instructed to literally turn their back to them. I guess if you look at a spiritual outlaw in the eye, you could become infected with their devilish thoughts. Is that what they're going with there? You cannot greet them, look them in the eye, or talk to them, or else you might become one. They literally, physically turn their backs. Adult humans turn their backs on people. It's honestly laughable. But what's not laughable, and perhaps the worst if you can really pick and choose between them, but I think you'll agree with me that the worst of their practices is the protection of the church over innocent children regarding child sexual abuse and the rampant cover-up that frankly rivals the Catholic Church. Only recently have Jehovah's Witnesses' cover-up of abuse been brought to light. Years after the Catholic Church was found to almost mafia-style cover-up sexual abuse of children. The Catholic Church is still clearly amongst the worst of the worst sinners for this ultimate crime, but where do the Jehovah's Witnesses stack up? Well, I'll let you decide. Their two-party witness system is a breeding ground for the elders of the church to have an excuse and a brainwashing tactic to keep the abuse inside their windowless walls. In 2019, Douglas Cuenca's, and I'm sure I'm saying that last name wrong, and I apologize, he came out with an article in The Atlantic about a secret database of thousands of Jehovah's Witness child sex offenders, one that included over 20,000 molesters back in 1997, a list that also has been locked away by the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society and governing body. The exact number is unknown, but rumor has it, like I said, that it's far greater than the 20,000 after a questionnaire was sent to all congregations in the U.S. asking members to reveal any suspected predators walking amongst them. One such predator was a male flight attendant who would bring chocolates back from his travels and lure young girls to his home for Bible reenactments. He has since been sued by victims and died a few years ago. However, the majority of the names on this list are a mystery, partially because of the Jehovah's Witness practice of keeping and handling all indiscretions and crimes in-house. A board of elders will decide guilt, and if this guilt hurts the church's reputation, then it is concealed and covered up. So much so that if a child comes forward with accusations of abuse, the two-party witness rule is applied, which means that a second witness, preferably a baptized adult, will have needed to be there to verify the truth of the claim. Sure, because as we know, grooming is usually a public display. Scumbags. In a Daily Beast article titled, "The Vice TV Doc Crusaders Examines a Secret Database of Thousands of Jehovah's Witness Child Sex Offenders That's Been Assembled by the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society," end quote. So, this article goes into detail describing how much of this came to light. And I'm not going to describe too much of the documentary, as I really encourage you all to watch it. It's enlightening and infuriating. But the Daily Beast says, quote, "Most of those individuals' identities are also a mystery, but not all of them. That's because, as Crusaders reveals, two ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, who in Kaufman's film go by Judas and Jezebel, broke into a local Massachusetts headquarters and stole some of the incriminating files. Moreover, they leaked one document on Reddit and then sent many more to a kindred ex-Jehovah's Witness activist named Mark O'Donnell, who operated online under the alias John Redwood. His story is also super fascinating. I encourage you to look into that. Continuing on, this in turn led to the article, which made national headlines and shined an accusatory national spotlight on Jehovah's Witnesses, who didn't take too kindly to being outed as an organization that in principle condemned child abusers, but in practice made sure to keep their crimes under wraps, lest the faith get a black eye as haven for the worst of the worst, end quote. I think that was beautifully said, so I had to directly quote it. And now here is Cassie to round out part two on the hell of living in the Jehovah's Witness cult.
So the one is called My JW Life. And I guess it's so long since I've listened to it. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he tells his story about how he grew up in this religion and the things that happened in his life growing up with his family and then getting married. They get married very young, and him and his wife, both Jehovah's Witnesses, realizing like all these different things are like red flags, but they were afraid to even say anything to their own spouse. Because you don't talk about it. You don't question it. That's the thing. You are not allowed to question it. Like, Yeah. So then that story, I'm not kidding. I drive a lot for my job, and I was on the road. And at the end of that story, he reads the letter that he wrote to his mother because she would not talk to him anymore. And I had to pull over and park my truck because I was crying. It broke my heart. You know, I mean, but there's a lot of stories out there about Jehovah's Witnesses and how they get, you know, they're love bombed and they're pulled in and then they're stuck. Because especially if you're born in or your family is there, it's like, who else do you have?
I want to know about your experience about, like, did you leave while your mother was still alive? Because she's the one that got you into it. And were your siblings, did they stay, all that stuff? Were you shunned?
Okay, so I'd like to maybe start with I was born into it. I grew up in that Kingdom Hall, you know, three meetings per week. And I was always very social, and I made friends at school easy, but I did not make friends at the Kingdom Hall easy. There wasn't a whole lot of children. There were some, and there were some even in my grade and in some of my classes, but I just didn't make friends with them. I mean, the most we hung out is when we got sent down to the library for holiday parties, you know, to read books and play games with each other. But I wasn't allowed to really be friends with my friends from school, you know, because they were considered bad.
Oh, yeah, associate with outsiders, right?
Yeah, they're considered bad associations. And my mother told me a million times in my life, that she told me once, a bad association bullies will have it. So I could not be friends with these girls outside of school. But I would see some of these other Jehovah's Witness children doing things that, like, if their mother and father knew, they would be in big trouble. They would be in that back room, you know, with the elders, you know, explaining themselves, and or their parents would be explaining for them. So it frustrated me.
Were they just doing basic kid things? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I saw one boy holding hands with a girl in the hallway. That would be a huge no-no. It's so simple,
okay.
Right? Or, but my thing was, is like, I think that's wrong that I can't be friends with these people. I've made genuine connections with these people, and that's who I want to be friends with. So then, but at the Kingdom Hall, even if I tried to make friends with some of those girls, I felt like their parents kind of have labeled me as a bad association, because they knew I had friends at school. So
That makes sense. Okay.
But so I feel like at a very young age, I knew that this was not the truth, as they called it. This was not true. So I think I knew from a very young age that it was not the truth. And so I kind of was a rebel, which is another reason the witness families wouldn't let their children, you know, invite me to volleyball games, you know.
But like, how big of a rebel? Like, come on.
I, like, I went to football games on the weekend. I mean, like on Friday night, high school football games. You know, but I was associating. Yeah, I'm like associating with all these worldly kids. You know.
Oh my God.
So, I was not in it, right? Plus, they very much, very much try to push you to get baptized at a very young age. And I'm talking like 11, 12, 13, because they want to lock you in, right? Once you're in, as an adult, they can punish you for a decision that you made as a child.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't do like, that. I refused.
Jehovah's Witness. She was like the most wild friend I had, to be perfectly honest.
Because she was so restricted.
Totally, but her parents were wild. I think that they must have had a loose affiliation.
That or they did everything undercover, man.
You what?
Is it that or they did everything undercover? Because you get called to the carpet for anything with them.
Well, we were from such a small town, though. There was only like one. What do you call it again? A Kingdom Hall?
Yeah.
There was, like, only one in, like, the nearby town. I think that there just wasn't enough Jehovah's Witnesses that they were really being watched, you know?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, keep going, sorry.
I think because I didn't get baptized, and then, like, at some point I was like, I don't want to go in field service, Mom. And then so they weren't seeing me there. Like, I wasn't trying. I wasn't thriving, right? So they kind of just, you know, discarded me. But like my mother, my sister, and my one sister, my one brother, who stayed in the religion, they would try to encourage me, like, well, you know, you really ought to get back to studying. I had an aunt who I adored, and so I entertained it for a while. She came over for about like 3 years, from the age I was like 14 to 16, and every week we'd have a Bible study. And she was very kind, but she was very like, you need this, you want this, you need this. And I did, and I was just doing it to appease them, right? So as a young adult, you know, my mother knew. I was like, and I told her, I was like, Mom, this is not for me. I don't believe it. And she was like, well, I'm never going to stop praying. I'm never going to stop hoping. You know, I'm going to be in paradise one day, and I want to see you there. And it's like, oh, you're guilt tripping the hell out of me, but I don't think you're right. You know,
so strong-willed? I mean, that's really, I want to say I'm very impressed by you that you were so strong-willed as a kid. And I'm also really happy that your mom and your aunt were very kind to you about it. But what do you think made you so, is it just who you are?
I think it's just who I am. I've always, good, bad, or otherwise, I've always been very, very hard-headed. You know, I learn everything the hard way, and if I want it, I go for it, and if I don't, you know, I don't want anything to do with it. You know, I've just been very hard-headed. So, as an adult moving out on my own, you know, my mom and my aunt would still call. They have what they call, oh my goodness, I can't think of the word. It's like their Easter.
Christianity has a made-up Easter, but you know what I mean.
Right. Like, they don't celebrate, like, the Jesus giving up his life. They don't celebrate his return. They celebrate the giving up of his life. The memorial service. It's called the memorial service. That's what they celebrate every year, and it's a huge thing, and they invite everybody they know, you know, whether it's somebody who's never studied in the religion or somebody that used to and has kind of fallen away, or they invite everybody. So every once in a while I would go to one of those just to like make my mom happy, even though she knew I wasn't going to do anything with it, but she was always still hopeful. And then when she passed, she was still Jehovah's Witness, and they gave her that really shitty funeral where they didn't even talk about what a great mom she was, even while being brainwashed. And then even now, so, like, I was never baptized, and I'm so grateful that I was so hard-headed as a young person, because had I done that and then realized it later, I would have had to make a decision. Okay, I'm going to be stuck here, not believing this crap and living this life I don't want to live, you know, or I'm going to give up and my mother, I know she loved me. She loved me so much, but she was so incredibly brainwashed that had I been disfellowshipped for something, she would not have associated with me unless it was, like, necessary family matters. She was an incredible mother. She was a great mother, but she was incredibly brainwashed. She was fully brainwashed. So had I been baptized at that young age, 11, 12, 13, like they all wanted me to. And then I was disfellowshipped later in life. My mother would have disassociated with me just along with everyone else because she felt like that's what she had to do for Jehovah.
And that's what happened to that Lauren Stewart I just told you about. Like, it ruined her.
Yeah, and so, like, the only communication that they're allowed to have with you at that point is necessary family business. So, like, so they would have called me and said, hey, so-and-so died, and that would have been the end of it. So I'm grateful for myself being as hard-headed as I was because I didn't have to have that relationship or that cutoff of a relationship. So up until the point where I was like 16 years old, I just went along with it. I went to the meetings, you know, I just played along, even though nobody was really that great to me there. I did it for my mom. But then at some point around the age of 16, she asked me if I was ever going to get baptized. And I said, Mom, no, I don't believe it. And I've watched brothers and sisters get disfellowshipped and seen people be shunned because they're shunned and they still come back and sit in that seat. And it was heartbreaking for me to even watch them. I couldn't imagine what it felt like to sit in that chair and nobody would even look you in the eye. I don't want this. I don't want this. And she cried. She had a complete come apart and I'm not going to get to see you in paradise. You know, we're not going to be there together. And I'm like, Mom, I don't believe that either. And then that was, you know, even more waterworks. But she was a great mom. And after she cried for a couple of days, she told me, I love you. I love you no matter what. And I'm never going to stop praying for you. And I'm always going to hope that you come back and you realize that this is the truth and that it, you know, you need this. And so she would, as from that point on, you know, she would ask, do you want to go to the meeting? I'm like, no. And she would let it go. So from 16 to 18, it was that, you know, do you want to go? No, I don't want to. And she didn't really push it. She would leave literature open on the coffee table or the dining room table for specific articles if it was something that she thought I needed to read, like Young People of the World and How It's Evil. You can't.
The only reason I'm asking is because I was like, it's very sweet that she didn't force you, but the passive aggressive leaving of the literature just makes me laugh a little bit.
So she was like, I'm never going to give up. I'm just going to leave this right here. She was very, very passive aggressive with it.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate your support. Love you. Bye. If you like Seven Deadly Sinners, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. And before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.